Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, April the 3rd, 2009. USDA this week released a friendly prospective plantings report, especially for soybeans, and the grains and the oil seeds rallied. Can the gains be sustained in these tough economic times? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist John Davis from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Here's the way the grain and oilseed markets finished in Chicago, along with the livestock. Remember, we give you the daily high, low, and the weekly trade as a settlement price for the overnight and day trade sessions. Futures in the wheat pit, the May contract at 565 high, a low at 501, and a settlement price at $5.65, up 56 and a quarter cents from last week. July wheat settled at $5.75 and three quarters, up 55 and three quarters from the previous Friday. May corn futures, $4.75, the high on the week, the low at $3.76 and three quarters, finished 17 and a half cents higher for the week at $4.45 week over week. December contract at $4.35.5, up 16 and a quarter from last Friday's close. May soybeans at $9.97.5 for the high, the low at $8.97, with a settlement price up 78 and a half cents at $9.95.5, the November new crop at $9.23.25, settled 62 and a quarter higher. April live cattle, $86.10 the high, the low at $82.80. A settlement price at $86.05, up $1.72.5. The April feeders at $95.40 were up $2.27.5, and the April lean hogs settled at $60.27.5, 20 cents lower on the week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's start our program with this question. Remember, our folks in the studio include Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services, Mike Georgie of Allendale, and Brian Stark of the Andersons. Paul Cooley, we'll begin with you. Traders I read this week from Chicago certainly believe that corn farmers will open their bin hatches up again before they go to the field to plant. Do you think that'll happen, and at what price if it does?
Well, there's an old rule at Paul Cooley's commodity office that if you're stuck and the market comes back to a level that breaks you even, you move that commodity into the marketplace or get out of that bad trade. And what we're finding is that $4 is the magic level on cash grain, and it's a profitable level, and they've had to suffer a little bit. And with 8.5% unemployment, I think they should move at least a big portion of that commodity into the marketplace at this time.
Brian Stark of the Andersons?
I'd agree with Paul. I think $4 cash moves corn, and I especially think they'll continue to move corn until the weather turns warmer and drier here, hopefully by the middle of this month.
And Mike Georgie?
Well, I think Brian and Paul are right, but I don't know if the farmer's listening or not, because I think the ones I've been talking to, they're thinking we're going to have a weather premium here. They're thinking the corn's going higher. Nobody wants to sell right now. Should they be? Yes. But I think they are thinking we're going to have a weather premium, and they're holding out for higher prices.
Well, on that note, what is at risk for them? What's the downside risk, do you think, if they don't move? And this, of course, is old crop corn. What's their risk?
Well, the risk is, of course, if we don't get the weather premium, I think corn's going to break hard again, as much as 20, 30, 40, 50 cents. I think if you hold it in the bin too long, if we turn to warmer weather, you've put your grain in the bin at higher moisture levels, you could be risking a lot of foreign matter, smell, a lot of bad corn being delivered. So, I mean, you've got a lot at risk, but I think I think they're still saying it's going to go higher, so I'm not selling it.
Of course, you know, the one thing that we are mystified with was the 7 million acres of acreage reduction from a year ago. I think the real question here is how much punishment will a farmer receive if he doesn't sell this rally of $4 or on the way up here? My hunch is it's 25 cents a bushel between now and the 4th of July on the downside. I don't think it's a lot, but it's a factor here. There's a ton of bushels to go out. Demand is still rough. We have a lot of problems in the economy and the world. And my hunch is that they're giving him a good chance to unload some of the big boat that he's holding.
Paul, you opened up the door for this last Tuesday's USDA reports. I know that the PowerPoint presentation that was made to the Secretary of Agriculture on that morning started not with the numbers from the prospective plantings report or for the quarterly grain stocks report, but in fact did start with the numbers from the principal crop acres. You talked about a loss of 7.8 million acres this year over the previous year. It now stands as principal crop acres for the year, according to USDA, that will be sown. These are corn, soybean, wheat and several other crops at 317.1 million acres. That's down 7.8 million from the previous year, which was 324.8. I think they did some. They talked a great deal, at least in the PowerPoint up front, about what acreage changes have been like in the previous year. 7.8 is a big change. Nearly twice as large as most of the other changes from previous times. In 2007, there was a gain of 4.7. In 2008, a gain of 4.4. There's never been this big a loss in the last 11 years. But in 2001, is that the correct, Ryan? That is not correct. In 2005, we had a low number, and 2006, we had a low number. We were down as low as 315.6 million acres in 2006. So we picked up a great deal of acres in 2007 and 2008. It seems to me that it's just as easy for farmers to lose those acres as it is for them to gain them. I'm not sure that I wonder why it is that the trade hasn't been able to wrap its head around the idea that they could lose those acres. What is it in the trade that makes them believe USDA is wrong?
Well, let's go to the reason why the USDA thinks they're right, and then we can go backwards from there. They think they're right because the major acreage of wheat was not planted, and there was like 4.5 million acres, and there's a lot of those wheat acres that are double cropped, and because it was so wet, for example, 360,000 acres in the state of Illinois won't be double cropped, and then the game goes on. My problem here is that we do have this 700,000 acres of cotton. We have this 4.5 million acres reduction in wheat. And it's extremely wet in the upper Midwest, and fertilizer still is high, and we still get a feeling of 3 to 5% from our seed people. You know, they feel that the seed beans sales are a little larger percentage-wise. So it's a group of things that add up, Todd, that put us in the idea that we think they got the thing wrong.
Well, do you think they got the corn acres right or wrong? They're at 85 million. There are a million fewer corn acres than there were last year.
I would say that at this point, it's a guessing game, and I think a lot of people were surprised. I think more people that we've talked to over the past few months thought the number would be lower. I don't know if it's as low as Informa was projecting earlier, but I surely think that 85 million was a higher number based on what Paul said. I think that fertilizer prices are higher still in areas. Seed costs are up. We didn't feel like talking to our customer base across the Midwest that there was going to be as much corn. So it'll depend a lot on weather, but it's interesting. I think that over the past couple of years, we've seen acreage kind of pick up over the spring. I think last year we gained 2 million acres from the March number to the June number. So some of those acres may show up by the time we're done planting the final plantings report.
Now, I'm going to suggest that most of your customer base is from the eastern part of Illinois into the eastern Corn Belt at this time, and the numbers there show no change, actually, in Indiana for corn, or in Indiana or Ohio for corn, and up 100,000 acres in Illinois for corn. But there are some losses of acres, for instance, 100,000 in Iowa. Do you get the idea that USDA just missed the eastern Corn Belt, that there are going to be fewer acres there too?
Well, I guess I want to go back to the acre numbers of the 7 million. I mean, we feel that a lot of the acres have been double counted. In 07, when you planted more wheat, then in the spring, people tore the wheat up and planted corn in the Midwest here because it was more profitable. Then you had the flood come, and in the acres that were flooded out, you planted beans, so they were counted. So I think we're thinking there's as many as 4 million acres that were actually double counted on the crop report. So, you know, the government ain't as far off as what everybody would like to think they are. And the thing is that, you know, the survey that we have with our customers, we come in with 85.4. So, and the outlook meetings we did across Illinois here in January, February, you know, the farmers are going to stay with their 50-50 rotation. So I don't think the corn acre is off by much at all.
Well, tell me what it means in your mind then for new crop prices.
Well, new crop prices, I think if you get to 450 on Dease corn futures, you need to put some protection on or start making some cash sales.
Paul?
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with that 450 mark as far as the futures are concerned to get in the starting gate and make some sales. You know, don't forget we have some major problems in the livestock industry. Exports are behind. The new administration isn't pushing the EPA enough as far as getting higher blends out quick enough. So we do have some problems with just basic math. A big yield and 84 or 5 million acres of corn, we have a pretty good carryover next year.
And I want to comment from all three of you just to see what you're thinking about this. There was a story in the news this week about the ethanol plants that Valero bought from Verison, that they're going to run them full bore. Don't know what you think about that one to begin with, and that they're going to take their hand at trying to trade corn as well as they have traded crude oil. What'll happen to them as they try to do that process?
Number one, we'll talk to our weatherman, but the energy industry loves to trade, and they have a buy-sell pad on their desk at all time. And if I had modern plants, I'd run them full throttle too. They have plenty of money. They're a big start. They don't run out of hedge money. They have plenty of money, and they can play the game just as good as anybody in that business.
I guess I'd have to make sure they're going to run them 100%. I've got some customers that actually sell to some of them plants, and they were told that if they can run them and make some money, break even, they're going to run them. Else they could shut them down for some time until it is profitable.
I think any customer that looks at an ethanol plant as an outlet these days has to look at the counterparty risk involved and know the customer that they're dealing with, irregardless of if it's Valero or Verison. Obviously, wasn't researched. But the interesting thing about the energy firms is as they get into this ethanol business and trying to purchase corn and hedge their risks across the board, it's a different animal. And I think it's separate from energy, and it takes some education in trying to learn a new marketplace. So it'll be interesting to see how they succeed versus, say, a Verison did.
How did you view the quarterly grain stocks report as they released on Tuesday for both corn and beans?
Well, they were smaller, and that's another thing that it tricked the trade, so to speak, Todd, and it helped with the rally. But I'd go on to say this, that it does help to have big pockets, and there's a lot of talent out there in the grain industry that I'm sure will give Valero some good advice.
So you're thinking Valero is going to make a run for this,
aren't you? I think they're going to run for it, and I think they're going to run those plants the way they should be.
And will that be good for the locals?
Sure.
All right. We'll settle there. How about the soybean market? What did you find this week?
Well, I think the soybean market obviously was surprised by the 76 million number. Our people that we talk to, and myself included, think that that's going to be the lowest number we see all year. Obviously, it's dependent on weather. If it's warm and dry, I think people will continue to plant corn. If it's cool and wet, more acres will switch back to beans. But still strength in the old crop market, I think, is what's going to lead the charge. Problems still, disagreements with the Argentine government and the farmer, as well as privates coming out and giving smaller estimates for the Argentinian crop, including one that the Secretariat took back. But I think the general consensus is the crop is smaller.
In just a couple minutes, we'll talk with John Davis. He's with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. You're listening to Commodity Week. It was recorded the third day of April 2009 and is a production of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Back in two.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Overall, March has turned out to be warmer and wetter than normal. March temperatures were 2 degrees above normal. Temperatures in the southern half of the state were about 2 to 3 degrees above normal, about 1 to 2 degrees above normal in the northern half. March precipitation was 4.2 inches, 1 inch above normal. However, much of that rain fell over northern Illinois. In fact, some areas received up to 5 to 6 inches of precipitation. Meanwhile, drier conditions prevailed in southern Illinois. Some areas in far southern Illinois received only about 70% of the normal March precipitation. We did get a late season winter storm this weekend that dumped 3 to 6 inches of snow in a band from Quincy to Chicago. Soil moisture is at or above normal across the state, while soil temperatures at 4 inches over bare ground are now getting up to the upper 50s in southern Illinois, mid-50s in central Illinois, and around 50 degrees in northern Illinois. You can expect cool, wet conditions to continue over the next week, and the National Weather Service outlook for April calls for near-normal temperatures and above-normal precipitation. As things start to green up, it's important to keep the average stage of the last spring freeze in mind. They range from the first week of April in southern Illinois, mid-April in central Illinois, and late April in northern Illinois. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm state climatologist Jim Angel.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. It was recorded the third day of April 2009. Our guest in studio are Mike Georgie of Allendale, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. On the line with us this afternoon, John Davis, ag meteorologist at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, John.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this weekend and the cold weather. Where will it hit and who's most vulnerable?
Well, it's really over the weekend and into early next week. Really, the entire Central U.S. will be influenced by a pretty significant late-season Canadian air mass that will be moving down from the Canadian prairies into the Plains, Midwest, Delta. And we expect freezing temperatures to drop all the way into central Texas and Arkansas and across much of the Deep South. So certainly it's going to be a colder period for the Midwest here coming up. And certainly in the interim for early next week, our concern is some winter wheat, both in the Plains Hard Red Belt and also in the Midwest Soft Red Belt.
Well, how concerned might you be?
Well, it all comes down to, and it always is a function of crop development. And some of the information that we've gotten over the past couple of days is that we've heard reports of quite a bit of jointing wheat across all of Oklahoma and then up into the southern portion of Kansas. And those are areas that we do have some concern about from a damage standpoint. So central Kansas into Oklahoma and northern Texas. We also have some concern for some of the softwood winter wheat in areas of Arkansas and Mississippi that's also in the jointing stage, and just south of there, some of that is heading already. And so in those, both of those zones, we think temperatures will be at levels that will cause some problems from a standpoint of damage to that winter wheat.
Thanks for being on board with us, John. You're one of the big weathermen in the United States, and it's a real honor to have you here on the deal. Going back in history, what's been the biggest bet on weather that you can remember? And you can either choose the energy or the grains or whatever, but what was the biggest bet where the most money was put on the line on the weather that you can remember over the last several years?
In the last several years? Wow, that's a tough question.
Was it 88? You know, what weather event were they betting the most money on?
Well, certainly from a standpoint of, you know, sensitivity to weather, 88 is right up there. And the sensitivity to weather in 88 was incredible in the ag markets. You also had some incredible times in the energy markets where you had incredible weather sensitivity. One was in the heating oil market back in the winter of 89-90, and then in the natural gas market during the winter of 2000 and 2001. And one of the things, one of the common themes of all those situations is that during the season, the only thing that mattered in all of those markets was weather. Nothing else mattered. And again, that's a relatively rare event when you think about all the fundamentals that go into the marketplace. But in all those situations, weather was the only thing that mattered for an extended period of time. But those kind of couple of events, you know, back in the last couple of decades, certainly I remember very well, and certainly were incredibly sensitive from a weather standpoint. Now, when you're talking about agriculture and energy, you know, from a money standpoint, there's always so much more money in the energy sector than there is in the agricultural sector. So it's kind of hard to compare those two. But from a bet standpoint and from a monetary standpoint, it's always the energy sector that seems like it has more riding on things than the ag sector, just because of the size of the overall arena.
With the improved weather forecasting that you have now, would it have been easier with the information you have today to step on those markets back that you talked about in 2001 and 88?
Oh, no question. Well, Paul, especially back in the 80s and the early portion of the 90s, you know, what we know today and so many different time scales of forecasting is so much different than what we had back 10, 15, and 20 years ago. And again, this is my 25th year in the business. And when I think back to the 80s and early 90s, how we looked at things and how we analyzed things back then are totally different than how we analyze things today. But, oh, God, I would love to have some of those situations back in the 80s and early 90s to deal with today, because there's so many better tools that we could use to give us indications of things in those key horizons here coming up. But, yeah, I'd love to go back in the future, if you will, Paul.
John, Brian here. I'm going to ask you to put your crystal ball out. Are you guys looking at delayed spring activity here over the next few weeks? What's the best guess? Are we in for a drier, warmer period coming up, or are we looking at another cool, wet spring?
Well, you know, certainly over the next couple of weeks, and as we get into the heart of April, things are not going to be good across the Midwest. And there's two factors for that. Number one, you know, you've gotten wetter as we ended out the month of March and went into early April, and it looks like the progression of systems just continues across the Midwest. So no question, the pattern is wetter than normal. The bigger issue to us is the colder pattern that we are getting into now. And we think this colder pattern is firmly in place for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And it seems like anymore, when you tend to have any real significant problems in the springtime with field preparation and corn planting in this case, It more so comes from the temperature profile than it does come from the rainfall profile. When you tend to get a cool pattern across the Midwest, there's a myriad of implications there. You tend to have low evaporation because of the cool temperatures. You tend to have your soil temperatures don't warm up. That's an obvious impact. And then even in between systems with a cool pattern, you tend to have a lot of cloud cover. You tend to get these low stratus decks that tend to form in between systems, so you never have any good evaporation. So the coolness in the wet pattern, we think, is firmly entrenched through the middle of April. And, we think it is going to be a problem across the Midwest. I think it can throw out right now, it's kind of obvious, any early planting across the Midwest. Now the question is, can you get in a normal time frame of corn planting, or is it going to be on the late side and go into the end of the month and into early May?
Are you looking for the summer to be hotter, drier, or what's your predictions for summer after we get this stuff in the ground?
Well, very difficult question at this stage of the game, and kind of getting back to Paul's comments is that, you know, we still have lots of limitations out there in the profession. And talking specifically about this summer in a relatively small geographic area, as the Midwest is to us, in dealing with things on a global scale, you know, it's too early to call specifics on overall patterns during those key times in July and into August. One of the things that we can say at this stage of the game is that from some of our initial research out there, we have no indications in the central U.S. that the fundamental items are there and the variables are there to cause any kind of an unusually hot summer. In fact, there's no indications right now to us from all the things that we've been looking at that you'd have any kind of, you know, serious heat problems over the long haul, you know, such as an 88 or a 95 or an 83. And so we don't have any of those indications right now. So we think going into the summer that, you know, the heat risk over the long haul on a macro scale is actually going to be lower than what you tend to see in climatological normals. But for specifics on rainfall and individual systems and, you know, 5 days of heat and if that interacts with pollination for corn or pod development for beans, you know, those are things that you can't answer sitting here in the early portion of April.
John, in Argentina, they're talking about a cut in the soybean crop. I'm wondering what are the things that you didn't, in terms of data, get out of South America that might have helped you predict that? Or others predict that, or maybe you did. And then do we lack the same types of things in China as they start to put their crop in the ground too?
Oh, well, from an Argentina standpoint, I actually kind of think that was relatively predictable. You know, going back to the beginning of their season and how patterns evolved across South America. And, you know, one of the interesting things that happened in the Southern Hemisphere this year is kind of at the same time, you had, you know, very high amplitude patterns develop across much of the Southern Hemisphere. Australia with their heat wave, the South America, especially Argentina, and then parts of even South Africa. All the major, you know, some of the mid latitude areas of the Southern Hemisphere all had heat problems at the same time. And there were signals of that ahead of time. Now, from a standpoint of the variables that you tend to look at, it's all different types of things. And again, and kind of getting back to Paul's great question at the beginning, is that, you know, nowadays you look at all different variables and see how those variables go together. And I think, you know, as we went toward Argentina, you know, there were signs that there were going to be some problems down there from a heat standpoint going into that period. And so from a global standpoint, and now turning our attention to China, from a global standpoint, there's right now certainly nothing in the way of any kind of situation where a lot of variables would be coming together that would be very worrisome from a weather standpoint across that area. And any more on a global basis, wherever you're dealing with here, Todd, you get into a situation where, you know, you're globally, all areas are kind of the same. It's the same data globally. And so whether you're dealing with Illinois, whether you're dealing with Argentina, India, China, Europe, globally, all the variables that you tend to look at are relatively the same. I don't see any difference, actually, between forecasting in China, South America, the U.S., Europe, or India.
John, thanks much.
Oh, my pleasure.
John Davis is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Our thanks to the folks in studio with us, Mike Georgi of Allendale, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. I'm Todd Gleason.